Welcome to Have You Heard, where we talk about issues at the intersection of agriculture and engineering. Let's get started. Here are your hosts, Morgan Hayes and Josh Jackson.
Welcome. This is the Have You Heard podcast. This is episode 75. A little bit about spring fertilizer application on our hay fields. System. Kentucky Livestock Facility. Boyle County, Kentucky.
Not Josh Jackson, the professor in Boston, but agriculture engineer as well. And I focus on precision livestock farming in my personal life. We raise vegetarian cattle, have some goats, also do some hay.
So before we get into today's topic, which is fertilizer, which is a pretty timely one, right? Let's talk a little bit about what's been happening.
Last couple of weeks, so we've done some spreading manure, so cleaning off a couple different areas and spreading that manure. So it's kind of that time of year. So not putting on our hay fields because it takes a little bit of time to break down, but putting on our other fields that aren't quite in use, the ones that need a little bit of love, but they're just our pastures.
Yeah, I think maybe for anyone who's not familiar, the manure, especially if it's got a lot of organic in it, it tends to bind up nitrogen. It actually tends to slow down release, which is wonderful if you mid to late summer application of nitrogen. The challenge is if you want grass to jump early, it can actually slow the process. So it's a little bit of a trade-off. Manure is a valuable fertilizer, good for organic matter.
Yep.
Lots of P and K in it typically. But if you want nitrogen, sometimes it can slow down the absorption just because it has a lot that will attach to those nitrogen particles and hold them. So that can be a little bit of a challenge. But like you, we tend to apply most of our manure on pasture that our cattle go on to, or sometimes we'll do fall application, pretty aggressive fall applications, and we'll hold some of it until then, even knowing that we're going to get nitrogen from it.
Yeah.
It just tends to off-gas. But the more stable P and K are really good for the pastures, and there's enough time for them to absorb, get into the soil, provided that you have enough ground cover on that it's not wash away with big rain events. Be really nice ground.
Yeah, and we applied some manure. We did some work on our manure spreader. So this weekend I spent time making sure. So we don't cut a lot of our strings off. We could take some of them off, but apparently we don't miss them all. So they accumulate in the manure spreader.
Yeah, they wrap is what they do.
Yeah.
They wrap up and they're very frustrating to get off. You either have to cut all that twine with a really dull knife, because that's usually what you have with you, or you have to unwrap them, neither of which is particularly.
So we end up, because it's wrapped up because we have the flails. We end up having to get the saws all out, essentially, and also have our knife, sharp knives.
Well, you guys are not messing around then.
Yeah,
we got
plenty of string on there. So we pretty much hit with the sawzall, pull off what we can, spin it a little bit, hit with the sawzall again, knife. And so we have to, sawzall seems to work, so it's not too aggressive. We're taking into our metal there, but that's what we found. It seems to work. And then also went and looked at some lands for the kids for this week, for the show season. So
did you pick any out?
We picked a couple out. So okay. We'll see. We're going to pick them up. When they get weaned, we'll go pick them up. But just looking at them, kind of selecting out a couple for the kids, and it's always a good thing. It gets them something constructive to do.
That three that you have now?
Three lands. We're looking at maybe four this year.
Okay. Who's going to show the fourth?
Probably Giovanna.
Because she's the champ.
She's the champ. So we have
there's two boys and one girl, and that girl, she knows how to show.
She knows how to show a lamb. The other two, they're out there.
Learning.
Yeah, they're learning still. Even though they're older. Even though
they're older. I always encouraging for me to hear the youngest and the one that's in charge.
It's the one that's in charge of the sheep, but she takes it seriously and is out there focusing, and other two, they have a good time. So.
There you go. Well, even if they're just having a good time, they're still learning, but it's pretty funny. She did very well, I think, last year.
Oh, yeah, she did very well. So we have kind of expectations for her this next upcoming year.
There you go.
How about you? What's been going on your way?
Oh, man, all kinds of things are going on. We're just starting into spring calving. So spring calving checks started this past week. So no calves yet on the ground, but we've got a number of cows that are close. You know, you can kind of tell when they're getting close. There's a number. I would expect this week that we will see our first calf.
Okay.
Other than that, we went to a auction a couple weeks ago and bought a new to us chute and pub system.
Okay.
That I'm excited about.
All right, which farm are you going to throw them on?
The rented farm right now has pub system on it, but no chute.
Okay.
So we transport our chute back and forth. So the tub works, but I don't love it. It is a functional system, but it's not perfect. We will probably reorganize everything out there when we.
Okay.
I mean, not everything. I mean, the catch area is the catch area to some point, but right. there's work to be done. Make this a little bit more functional. That we will actually prefer a pad with the. I'd like to have a scale there. We don't have. But we have enough cattle there. We pride check their calves off of that farm. There are reasons to want some. Right now, just wean. That's another thing that's happened a couple weeks. We calves have to haul the calves. Then we have to get them through a facility at a second spot to get weights on them.
Okay.
I don't know if it's exactly extra work, but it's maybe not the most efficient way to do some of
additional stress for the cats. They wean them, additional stress for them, transport, then also have to go
through. It's not even a full chute because I usually don't even put the chute in the front when I go. I have a self catch, but I just use it like a gate. I stop them with it and then I release them.
Okay.
So they don't get caught with their heads, but I still need a. That's just a personal thing for record keeping. I like to have. So this will allow us not to have to transport that chute all over the place. We will have something there. If there's an issue, there will be something to catch a cow on that farm safely without having to haul in the chute. And as you know, when it gets to this time of year, it's dicey. You have to haul anything with mud. So
right.
A new to us system. I think I'm pretty excited about it. It's new to us. It's probably 8 or 10 years old, but it was farm kept in it.
Right.
Anyway, that's a big thing. I'm trying to think what else has been really happening. Most important to discuss. I mean, I said this before the show. Should we like tongue in cheek? Should we call it early spring? But it feels like early spring right now. Grass is greening up. There's things that we're doing. We're cleaning up fence lines. We're getting things ready for the season. One of those things that we're getting ready for is fertilizer application. I know you've been playing around with, we talked about the manure, but fertilizer application is our topic.
Yep. And so we did our dedicated, you know, actual commercial fertilizer. So we did that probably early March.
And ours is going on this week. So I said I wanted to wait till the 15th. I know we get enough these potential events middle of March that I was sort of trying to wait till closer to April 1st. But it's going, the grass is growing so much right now that even with a couple cold days this week, we bit the bullet and just hauled our fertilizer.
Okay.
So sometimes we apply ourselves, but for our initial application for all of our acres, we have 80 acres.
Okay, I know for us, we're a lot of times we do so prior to the fertilizer, so I said we did the March 8th, we do our soil sampling in February.
Yep.
So we soil sampled pretty much all the different farms, so pretty much all but maybe 100 acres where we kind of can actively manage and just see Where are they from a NPK standpoint, lime standpoint? And really, we have a couple that, you know, need some lime. So, like, those will get dedicated lime before they get any nutrients. So, to balance the pH, then we apply nutrients. There's been a couple places where we've sometimes in the past applied urea just to, like, it needs a lot of things, but just push a little bit of something, get some grass out of it. And we know it can produce. A lot of times we're working we apply ourselves. So that could be frustrating to some degree. And so I can see where it'd be definitely beneficial to get another individual to apply it for you, just because, you know, you're getting a buggy, and a lot of these buggies have been maybe driven hard. And so there's some places that take care very good care of their buggies and other places that don't.
I think even places that take good care of them struggle where a lot of people stuff challenging on them. So even places that do a good job, there can be issues.
and the other challenges we figured out, when we planned March 8th or so, was that we were the first ones to use the buggy. So it hadn't had a lot of it. You hadn't seen it. It's like, it should work. Let me know if there's any issues, kind of thing. So that was another challenge, was that it hadn't really been gone through the paces yet.
That's fair. Yeah, because we are still ahead of crop season. So that is one of the reasons that we are applying. So with the weather like this, we'll start looking at putting crops in the corn and beans go in. The opportunity to have someone spread fertilizer on fields, smaller acres, like, we become very low on the totem pole. Which is okay. So that's one of the other reason that we usually target early April, but this year we're just going to do it a few weeks. The one challenge I will say is that we do our soil testing in the fall, and we usually apply lime every other year. So last year we did, not fall of 23, but fall of 22, we applied lime. So fall of 24, this coming fall, will be another lime application. That's just based upon the fact that we usually hire well.
Yes.
And since we're hiring that done, we just try and cover all the acres every other year. So we did some soil testing. Honestly, nothing looked terrible. If it had been really bad, we would probably reevaluate putting fertilizer on. Nothing is way out of whack. So everything that fertilizer.
Okay.
I think that will be good. We have a couple fields that I would have liked to do overseeding or fall. Drilling, not actually broadcasting of clover. But with the drought this year, we didn't do that. And so we'll push nitrogen and PK as needed. And we're going to hit sort of oddly what we think all the fields. Okay. Since we're getting it done commercially, we're going to give them one application date for fields, so they can mix the whole tank. They can go to multiple fields rather than us trying to get smaller volumes of different amounts. Because these are all fields that we manage for hay, they tend to pull similarly because we have a crop. The only one that's different is we have an orchard clover field that tends to get multiple applications.
Okay.
A higher quality. Sometimes we'll add some PK later in the summer. Really good. But like last year where it got dry, we didn't
pull
that many cuttings.
I know for us, you know, we try to hit, you know, we take our soil samples for a lot of our hay fields. So, you know, there's what they want and then what we can actually afford to apply. And so we usually hopefully give them a half rate. So I think last year we did a half rate. 2020 and 2021, during the pandemic, we probably did a quarter rate just because the prices went up so much. But, you know, this time we're kind of doing a half rate, you know, what they will need and then kind of what we expect to get from that application. And if we expect our hay barns are essentially not empty at this point, but we pretty much will make it to April, mid-April, hypothetically. And assuming nothing goes horribly wrong with the weather wise. And so our plan is to maybe push a couple of these fields, give them some now, and probably maybe after first cutting in May or something, hit them again with some P&K, give them another little boost as well. And then also a couple of our pastures, go ahead and give them some urea in May or so as well. So hit them now, let them get some good growth and put the cows out there and then pull them off and then hit it again with some urea, get another boost.
I think that's a good strategy. I think you have to balance out the cost with the benefit, but not fertilizing at all after the last couple of years would be, I think for us, would be a really poor choice. We're tight on hay. I think most people are tight on hay. There's not a lot of reserve right now, although I've seen a few people dumping some. I watched sell. I don't know why, to be completely honest, sell it as cheap as we're selling hay right now, because by next year there'll be a demand again. So yeah. If you think it's 2 or 3 or 4 year old hay, yeah, you need to mix it up. But if it's only gonna be 2 year old hay next year, please.
Store it some way and
make sure you get good mineral. Personally, I wouldn't undersell it because.
Yep, I saw some hay being transported this past weekend.
Yeah, and I think there's value in. We have enough hay, certainly for us to get through the year, and we might have an extra 100 bales only because spring looks like it's early this year. We'll try and keep cattle on. Week into April, maybe or so, maybe 2 weeks. But I realistically, with grass growing the way it is, not sure we're going to hold them back that much longer.
Okay.
I don't know how you feel about it. I think it's going to be a struggle to hold them.
And it's like ours is taking off. Like where I fertilized, you know, it's really taking off and responding well. So if it does continue down that path and we get a couple good dry days, I would like to move cows out there and have them start grazing. Really, this time of year, they always suggest to start early so that you can kind of get it, you don't want the grass to get too far ahead of you. And you're just trying to play catch up, essentially.
And how long have you had hymen?
Probably since January.
Oh, wow. You've had it up. You had it up very early.
Yeah.
Yeah, we did not put it out that early. We put it out in early March. So we're sort of trying to hold off to make magnesium minimize. I don't think it's going to be a problem. I would like to have 3 weeks at least to get to fresh grass, but really a little bit more than that. Normally we don't put out mineral middle of March. So
okay.
Moved up mineral a little bit, move up cows a little bit, but just make sure they.
Right. Yeah, because we're trying to avoid, in this case, grass tetany.
Exactly. Okay, so let's talk a little bit. We talked a little bit about how we apply. Your strategy is more field specific, even toned down from what the grass says.
Yep.
I have a broad application fields this year that should push grass in general. And it's designed for like a Kentucky grass mix.
Right.
Pushing any. One of the reasons that I have that application, I've had so much frustration with buggies getting uniformity. And I'm not actually that bad at running lines. Like, I can usually run a straight line, but I do not use GPS. I'll be 100%. I have old tractors. Don't tend to run. But the other thing is that those buggies say they throw a 50-foot width, and they throw a 25-foot width. So depending on how much I'm applying, I have to be careful to get the buggy set correctly so that I can either double run or that I can run on 25 instead of 50 foot
right.
Spray width. And when I get it applied by the company, I pay for them to apply the acre, but at the same time, I get a much more uniform, they can do it much faster.
Right.
So how do you handle that with the buggy?
A lot of times we kind of maybe we'll go 40 foot width. Something we're going to try for the upcoming applications is we weren't able to do it this spring because pretty much we got the buggy and had to go out and run out there and apply. But hey, we're thinking about actually getting our pans out and calibrate, making sure what is the distribution curve look like for that buggy. And then using that because we have a little GPS system like on a light bar that helps us steer. So put it on the 40 foot width or whatever it specifies for the desired amount of overlap and using that to help make it more manageable. Now, a couple of fields where it's the pastures and it's a tree here or there, I don't really run the GPS in there because it's usually small enough where I can kind of know where I am and just it won't help because there's enough trees to kind of block the signal. And so in those fields, I just run it as it is.
Do your best?
Yeah, I just do my best. And it's like I know pretty much where I am from past to past. And that's the other thing, we write down our buggy number.
Yep.
And so we ensure that if we do see streaking, if we do see an issue, we know to go like, okay, buggy 12 is going to give us a line. Buggy 12, we know which ones are going to look out for. or to tell them, like, hey, there was an issue, we had streaking, might want to check suspender speed or something, the right. belts. Well, they may be slipping, so there might there could be another issue. I don't know. And one time, we had pulled in the field, just started, pulling forward, and then I was told to stop because it was one spinner was spinning correctly, the other one, the way the belt routing was spinning backwards.
Oh, so it was throwing both to the same side.
It was throwing both to the same side. Yeah.
So, you had a side slinger, buggy.
So it was, sometimes you have to, maybe actually have somebody out there to validate check your equipment as you're going.
That's wild, actually. That's amazing.
So, yeah, then you get back and you deliver the buck, you drop it off. They're like, does this one work? Yeah. I'm going to take that one then. It's like, okay. So there's a lot of times, I think even other farmers and producers know that there can be issues with the buggies.
I think that's fair. I would agree with that we all kind of know that there are certain buggies that have certain characteristics. We will sometimes, if we do later in the summer, some more urea or something, just trying to throw or even maybe a little bit PK too, but on a smaller number of acres that will use the buggy. I just like to make sure that I'm willing to throw 100 pounds down on whatever I'm doing
right.
per acre. If I'm less than 100 pounds, the buggy is almost few. It is so hard to get precision if I'm not willing to throw a full 100.
Yes.
So that is sort of the key. That most times if you look at like a hay field, they'll suggest like 50 pounds per acre for nitrogen or a crop and cutting do another 50. But that is not a practical application suggestion. It's not to bash anyone that makes it, because I understand why. That's what you're pulling off with the crop is 50. So that's what you should put back down, or approximately if you're getting a reasonable tonnage on your acre. But from an application standpoint, you need 100. Like that's realistic for application. So if we know we're going to get three cuttings, we might do an application 100 pounds later in the season. Get nitrogen push grass back out in a field, but we have to sort of know that we're in a good enough season where there's a chance for a third cut and some regrowth in the fall, and we know that some of that nitrogen is going to go to regrowth in the fall. Grass for spring.
And another thing, so you mentioned having enough a rate, application rate. So I know when we get high enough, so we get usually, because some of our fields they need a lot of love, and so they'll get 400 pounds per acre of just total mixture.
Yep.
And so at that point, with the you open in the back of the buggy, it's 4 inches, 5 inches, we actually a lot of times will shift to the high speed mode just because our shear wall will be shorter. So a lot of times we try to have a shorter shear wall when we're hopefully getting a more uniform and accurate, as opposed to that big shear wall, you can't guarantee.
It doesn't fall the way you'd expect it to. Yeah, that's exactly right. That's a very fair point. For anyone that doesn't know, what essentially Josh is talking about is on the back of the spreader, there is a gate that opens. It turns open, and the amount of opening is what allows the fall of the fertilizer out of the back, and then hits the pans and spin, and they throw the fertilizer out pathway. There are two gearings typically on the buggy system. So if you're doing your own application, a high and a low, I am always in the low because I tend to do later summer small applications. I want it to go out as slowly as it can. Whereas the feed line, what this is there's actually like a feeding
chain drag
in the bottom of the buggy that's pushing the fertilizer towards the back. And so it goes much slower on the slow drive, and then on the fast drive, faster, which keeps bringing more and more fertilizer towards that opening where that gate opens, or however you want to think of it. It's a metal panel that lifts up and down. Gate is probably a water term.
Yeah, I think it would be similar. Yeah, gate would be an appropriate thing.
So, yeah, but it's just a metal plate that gets lifted up off of a gear.
And so because we have a smaller shear wall, so our shear wall, when we have the high speed mode, is maybe about 2 inches. So we feel a lot better about that being delivering a constant flow of product, as opposed to if we had a 4 inch or 5 inch opening where, we can't necessarily guarantee that uniform amount of material, just because of the way, shear is going to work. It's the flow of materials may not always be as uniform with the high speed. We can have much smaller shear walls, so we can assume that it's being a little more uniform application.
Yeah, that's a very fair point, and probably one that people that do this are really familiar with. But if you've never really used a buggy before, these are pretty hard concepts to grasp. And the first time you, there's not a lot of information out there about how to set them up. But there is a nice table on the back of the buggy. It is usable. You can figure out what you're doing to some extent. And Google is your friend. But if you're doing low applications, you should use the
Slow gear.
slower gear. And then if you're doing high applications, the higher gear, because exactly like he said, that's what's going to give you the better uniform and consistency, as well as you can with a buggy, with the caveat that the buggy is not going to be as, a sprayer system that's on the crop fields, or even the spreader trucks that some of the companies that effort like all of them with the GPS system and the application styles, they're much better typically in the buggy.
And so they, I think they'd be more resilient because the buggies, how much, how tight is your belt? Is it really, are those spinners? I think typically they say about 1,000 RPM. So
The right tire.
is the right, yeah, right time, it's just.
Because everything's, it's all a ratio of sizes and gears, and all of it's there,
Then
and it
air pressure
usually
too.
air pressure too. Yeah, exactly. Because how fast the wheel spins is a pretty big role in how the buggy. So all of that is in there. But let's, before we end today, let's do one more thing and let's talk a little bit, because you've been doing some work with your sprayer drone, looking at fertilizer application drone.
So we have, it does come. So you have a sprayer application with the drone, but you also have a spreader application with it. And so you could probably put down maybe your 100 pounds of urea, 100 pounds, that application would be more appropriate. And so at first we thought, there's a couple, we were looking at this initially thinking, oh, there's going to be a lot of variables you got to think about. Then in hindsight, we're like, oh, yeah, we thought speed was going to be one of them. How fast can we fly the drone, or should we go top speed? And really, I'd almost lean towards, flying at top speed just because you want to cover as many acres as possible during that time frame. So just to be efficient, I was like, well, we could fly slower, but we're going to lose efficiency in what we can do in a day. And there's going to be tree. If there's a lot of trees in a field, it may not be the best for a drone because it has
Right.
to navigate around those, and there's going to be a lot of points in which it may just stop unless you want to risk your drone getting close to trees. So that'd be a caveat. But in a field, we could put down 100 pounds in about 2 minutes. Depending on how far away from it, it'll depend
Okay.
on how far away you are from a field, but you can put down 100 pounds in 2 minutes. And so, we assume that we have 6 to 8 minutes of battery life, and so that's plenty of time, I
Okay.
think, to get there and back wherever you may be.
What's the weight limit? How much can it
It
carry?
can carry 100 pounds.
100 pounds is what it can carry.
And so, for us, the other variables are that we still have to figure out. You can adjust, the our RPM. So you can go from 500 to 1300 RPMs for our spinner. We can adjust how high we fly. So how high we fly will change, determine, how much of width we're covering every time, and how
Right.
much overlap do we need to have for those. So that's another concern for us. And the speed was the other kind of variable. We said, well, maybe that one's not as much as variable as we thought it was going to be. You have to be efficient with your time and battery. You're going to probably go as fast as you can.
Makes sense. So the only question that I have is, how concerned are you with like drift and things like that?
I'm somewhat concerned. I mean, maybe we, and that's the thing. I've been looking at the past about a week or so. We've had about 9 mile per hour winds almost every day. So, the optimum, I'd like to be below 5. We put it out at 9, and you're flying at 22 miles an hour, and it seems to do a fairly resi be fairly resilient because you're just throwing it out there, and it's just that height and figuring out how it's going to move on the way down.
Yeah, I think the other thing I think is interesting is a lot of times we talk about sprayer application, which those nozzles are putting out much smaller drops. And these are much bigger particles, solid particles. So I would assume that there's still going to be some movement, but it's going to be less than it would be if.
Yeah, with the size of those, urea particles, we have 50 pounds. I can't remember the density
I think around
characteristic.
that
50
30,
pounds, I think.
55.
And so it's gonna spread fairly uniformly, and it seems to be fairly robust, I think, against the wind. I mean, a
Okay.
lot of times, and we can adjust that if we want to fly with the wind, depending on our field shape, we could fly with the wind or against the wind. We could fly so that we kind of minimize that effect of the wind. So I know
Yeah.
for calibration, from a calibration standpoint, a lot of times you have to go with the wind pattern if we're
Yeah,
doing
so if the wind's
calibration.
from the south, you would go from south to north or from north to.
Yes, as you're flying. So you could adjust your flight patterns to match that, or if you really wanted like the fields long east west, you could still fly east west and just know that maybe some of you're gonna load
Maybe you
towards it.
just.
Yep,
Okay.
bias your paths
For
for
that.
that, yeah.
Movement. Interesting. I think that's a pretty interesting option. I certainly for me, that's something I would consider, especially as we get. Because, like I said, the buggy I don't love for later summer applications. I'm forced to put 100, even if 50. And so, like on a year like last year, where I would have liked to put a little extra down, but with the drought, I was concerned about putting nitrogen down, wasting it. And 100 pounds seems like an excessive amount to put down. And it could become dry here in about a week. So,
Oh,
it's a
yeah.
pretty quick
Yeah.
changeover with our soils. So that's something just sort of to keep back of your decisions. How you're going to apply it, how uniformly it's going to apply, what a reasonable application rate is, what volume you need, cost out different types. So like 10 or 20 acres is high for you. You have to have enough acres to justify.
And even with for us, our buggy, there's buggy fees. A lot of times, we're not putting like half a buggy. We're filling up that buggy a lot of times. Okay, just well, it's this much more to fill it up. Go ahead and fill it up, and we'll just put a little spot here or there.
Well, yeah, I mean that's absolutely true. Plus, the time is you've already put in the time and the gas to go pick up the buggy, drive it there. I
Yep.
mean, it seems wasteful to do it for a not full buggy. It's actually a pretty hard sell to take a buggy home that
Yeah.
isn't full, unless you live right next to the fertilizer
I think.
sales place. If you live real close, you can justify that. But if you don't live real close, it's the time your time and effort is worth something.
I've seen a couple producers do it, but they were on hillsides, and so maybe now with the drone, maybe that'd be more appropriate for them
Yep.
when they're talking, look at these hillsides. They were getting 1,000, 2,000, they were getting a ton in the buggy just because of the hillsides. Well, maybe that would be more appropriate for a drone as opposed to a buggy in the future.
That's all very interesting, and I think probably a lot of opportunity there. Okay, so before we end today, though,
Okay.
in case we actually get to do another podcast next week, knock on wood that we've been through the illness and the hiccups with the glitches in the system here, but hopefully we'll be back for another podcast next week. What do you hope has happened by
I'm hoping to get our equipment worked on, so we're going to change the oil, change filters on everything, get the general maintenance on all our tractors done, send the one tractor off, and then just work on some of our hay equipment, making sure everything's going to be ready to go for that troubleshooting.
We are organizing barns, which sounds like a silly thing to be doing at this time of year, but
Nope.
we need to get all of our small items put away and all of our wagons cleared and prepped for hay season. So last year we came into hay season a little underprepared on the wagon, which is not the end of the world, but like every grease fitting, wheels need to be repacked, things like that. They don't have to happen every year, but they need to happen regularly so you don't have wagons fail in the middle. So we're just trying to get everything that we've basically cleaned up an area, put everything on the wagons. Now it has to go back off the wagons and the wagons have to prep. So it seems like a lot of work, but it is just the reality of hoarding things.
Yes. I mean, yeah, I know because we need to organize at some point. We've got to go through and organize all of our tools. Probably
Yeah.
once we start trying to change oil and everything, we'll start cursing and then have to find and organize
Find and
everything.
organize tools. Yeah, every year you have to. It seems like you're like, isn't there like one spot that should be always be in it? Yes, but it's never there when you need it. So this is the time of year when you start finding, start doing all of that the spring, early spring preparation work is when you start going, where did that go last fall?
Yep. What was I doing? I mean, start trying to trace your steps.
Yeah, we're trying to find hay wagons right now. Wagons, hay wheel, the wheels, the tires.
Okay.
We have extra tires, spare tires, and they have like completely disappeared off the face of the planet. So maybe by next week I will know where tires have gone. You can ask me, I'll probably say no, but maybe by May I'll have found at least one of them, hopefully. that's where we're at. Other than that, hopefully you've done pregnancy trials, right?
Yep.
For the fall. That's not next week.
Okay.
That's an Easter weekend task. Birthday. That seems like a good time to work.
Yeah, ideal time.
Yeah, the ideal time. Put high stress into the marriage right there. So that'll be our plan. With that, we will see you guys next week with hopefully a podcast.
Take care, everybody.
Have You Heard is a production of the University of Kentucky College of Agriculture, Food and Environment, along with the Department of Biosystems and Agricultural Engineering. Discover what's wildly possible at ca.uky.edu.